Hi, and welcome to another episode of Telekinesis. This is Daniel Raskin, CMO at Kinetica, and we are doing episode 5 of Telekinesis, data-to-data conversations. I'm here with my producer, Casey. Hello, Casey.
Hello.
And today we have a very special guest. We have Jeff Kennedy, who runs the Fed business at Kinetica. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today on this podcast.
Yeah. Well, how are things going? You're like hiding away somewhere in Virginia. Is that correct?
Yeah. I live about an hour west of Washington, D.C. in a town called Middleburg, Virginia. Think of it as it's a place for like billionaires with horses that in their families, but probably have never worked. Although, you know, I'm like the cheap hand that's out here. But so we're far away from everybody. Live on gravel roads. I'm probably two miles or more from any kind of hard surface road.
So does this mean like you can totally like hide away from humans? It could just be you and nature?
Yeah, you have me, my family, my dogs. We have out back right now are turkeys and deer walking around. So it's true country. And being Virginia, if you want to go out in the backyard and shoot a gun, you can do that too. Nobody cares.
So you could do like turkey wrestling or any kind of weird thing you want to do out there, you can be doing.
Yeah, I have a recurve bow, and if you know you want to get hungry, you just go out back.
Wow. And are you stocked up? Are you like actually going out and doing shopping and stuff like that, or are you guys just like totally burrowed food away?
So my wife Sarah's gone out a couple times with Katie, and they've gotten some, you know, food up in Leesburg, but I haven't left the house in 3 weeks.
That's impressive. I'm the one who, like, the moment we talk about shopping, even before we get into the conversation, I'm like, I'll go. I just like want to get out. You know, I'll put a scarf on my face or a mask, but I want to get out and just like see people again.
I heard this guy yesterday on a podcast I was listening to, and he said, you know, I was thinking about it, and I've been in my house for 38 days. In my entire life, I've never been in a place for 38 days. And I thought about it, and I was like, I think I'm the same. I don't, because I'm usually somewhere, right? Go somewhere. So
yeah, I would imagine salespeople are just going out of their mind, because I imagine all the travel, all of a sudden to be grounded and not jumping on planes. On some ways, it's probably good. On other ways, it's probably driving people nuts.
It's actually been No, I wouldn't say it's hard. It's a little challenging for me in a way, because working from home, I don't have the best internet, but I average something like 8 to 10 customer meetings a day now. Wow. They're off the chart because everybody's available.
Yeah, it's. I guess that's not a bad thing. One positive thing of COVID-19 is more people are talking and taking time to slow down, I guess. Before we dive in though, Casey, I do have a surprise for you in particular. And then I want to get all into, Jeff's background. I want to talk about Earth Day, all those types of things. But Casey, I was looking through the news yesterday and I got a notification, a boba notification, that in Japan, Domino's Pizza now offers a tapioca boba pizza. And I thought you would find that in particular quite interesting.
I wonder if that would be good.
I think it probably wouldn't, because you'd think it would be like a sweet pizza, but it actually has cheese and stuff on it. Like it's savory with tapioca.
That's probably a hard pass for me, but I appreciate the creativity.
Yeah, I agree.
Sounds horrible.
So Jeff, this is like our Earth Day celebration session. You know, we had Earth Day 2020 yesterday. We had this announcement about some of the stuff we're doing with the Earth Day program around kind of citizen science. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what's going on there?
Yeah, if we look backwards about a year is when I got started with Earth Day through my executive contacts at Department of State. So you have Earth Day Network, which obviously sponsors Earth Day. Yesterday was the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. You know, looking at things like climate change, pollution, all the things associated with the planet to try to keep the planet healthy. State Department is pretty integrated into this through the greening diplomacy initiatives that they have worldwide that come out of the embassies. which my friend runs. And we were fortunate enough to get involved early and have Kinetica kind of as the baseline architecture database, kind of, you know, information ingest point for data that citizen science people were putting that data live into Kinetica yesterday. So downloading apps, taking pictures of trash and pollution, uploading it, and in real time, you know, we could see results around the world of what was going on and people cleaning up plastics and recycling them. It was pretty fascinating. It's going to continue to grow, even though we just had one day. This is just the first of many things that are going to occur. In June, there's another event, and we're going to take things like plastics and food safety and water, kind of other data elements, and combine them into this. So you'll have kind of a multi application platform all running on Kinetica worldwide.
Right. So this is like a global thing. Anyone can download on Android or iPhone this Earth Challenge 2020 app and just start kind of engaging as a citizen scientist to take photos of plastic, air quality, things like that, and start uploading just massive amounts of data.
Yeah, and the other thing that's, so as we're collecting data, what's going to happen is we're opening up an API so that citizen scientists can take the data out of Kinetica, putting it in some of their own models if they want, make updates, adjust the metadata, and then recycle the data back in. So it's going to be a growing platform for us, the Earth Day Network, and State Department.
Have you tried the app?
No, I used it yesterday. I kind of cheated. I'm in the middle of nowhere. So I went into my recycling bin, took a bunch of plastic, threw it out in the yard, took some pictures of it, and then marked it as recycled, put it back in the bin.
Ah, so that was my son asked me that question, because I was like, oh, we're doing this cool thing. Like, let's go for a walk. We could take pictures of plastic. And he's like, wait a second, you're going to just take pictures of plastic? He's like, yeah, I'm going to upload the pictures of plastic. He's like, you're not going to pick it up? I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. I guess we should pick it up too.
Yeah, they had a recycling thing, like an action, right? So you can take action.
So where did this all start for you? Like, how did you get connected into like the federal business and like this public sector world?
So I don't want to go too far back, but I was kind of destined to be more of a pro sailor than anything else. I was a sailmaker. I was a rigger. I was doing a bunch of work, and I was like, God, I don't think you can make any money at this. So I got a job in an engineering firm. It was a defense contractor. And so I was working on underwater acoustics, anti-torpedo defense systems, things like that. And while I was working there, I met Tom Siebel at Oracle. Mm-hmm. We became friends, and I went to work for Oracle. So that's when I first was introduced into, you know, using information technology, solving customer problems at scale. Mm-hmm. And so that was, you know, many years ago, but that's kind of where I got started.
How big, when you went with Tom to do Siebel Systems, how big was Siebel at that point?
I started about, I think right after they went public. I could have been like the first 15 guys in there. Mm-hmm. But I just had kids, and I was like, eh. And this is work for stock and no money might not work for me.
Yeah.
So I waited a little while. So when I went to work for Tom at Siebel Systems, I took over public sector. I started it with just me and one other guy and a C that we hired. Mm-hmm. And the first year we did a substantial amount of revenue. We had systems in place with the Navy and with unemployment offices in different states and mm-hmm. GSA. So, I mean, it was crazy. And we weren't selling CRM.
Yeah.
You're selling case management.
Right.
It's basically the same thing. We just changed all the words and the columns and everything else in the application. It became a case management application.
And so did you see like a pattern of like, oh, I get like how to build out this public sector practice at young companies? Like, did you see some kind of pattern in terms of what you could be doing?
Yeah, that's a good point. So I actually started that at Oracle, because at Oracle, I was working with the federal group, and although working for Tom, he had the direct marketing. We're like, how do we supercharge the revenue inside Oracle? So it was like, we need to build an ecosystem. We need to have you know, 8A contractors and the big federal systems integrators. We need these guys all on our team, all integrated together, so that any agency we go after that we want to provide a solution, we've got service personnel, I got contracts, I've got an ability to execute. That's where this kind of model came together. And it doesn't matter where you are. We're doing that today at Connecticut. We're building out the ecosystem so that it supports our engagements with customers to solve their big problems.
Right. And if you were talking to like a young salesperson who is trying to get into the public sector world, what would you say to them in terms of like the most important things to know in terms of understanding that mentality and just how to get connected there?
Yeah. Other than run away. it's not for everybody, but the sales cycles tend to be long, or at least traditionally you think they're long, because there's multiple cycles. The selling cycle is the easiest cycle. The acquisition cycle is harder in a lot of cases. And so you have to kind of thread the needle on those. So if you're we'll call them like a partner-friendly, you know, multifaceted sales thinker, you're going to be fine. If you try to do everything on your own, it's not going to work out that well. You might get lucky, but it's just harder to do. But it's funny because I also sold into the utilities. And people are like, God, government's so hard. I'm like, are you kidding me? Utilities, they're big. They're public. They don't give you much information. They're regulated by the government. I mean, they're way harder than government.
Yeah. So it's interesting, though, because like at Connecticut, it feels like every time I talk to you, you're talking about, you know, major transformations that are just happening across the government, whether it be, you know, in logistics or defense or, you know, Earth Day. You know, it seems like there's just so much going on right now in terms of government innovation and investment in technology.
Yeah, I think we're at a very interesting place in government. Our federal government has most likely, I think they have more geospatial data than any other, you know, organization or market in the world. Mm-hmm. Most of that has been untapped. So if you're looking at things like service to the citizen or public safety, or, you know, looking at where money's being misused or fraud, I mean, all of these cases, that data exists, but there's nobody that's been able to do the, you know, data fusion, data correlation, do it at scale and provide, you know, true service to the citizen. Mm-hmm. And we're in a place where we can do that now. And it's the one thing that's kind of hard is that we actually have a platform that can solve so many problems. We have to be careful about where we focus.
Yeah.
And just narrow in on the right use cases. There's a tremendous amount of activity and push in artificial intelligence and machine learning. It's almost in everything that is out in the press and everything that you see in solicitations, whether it's cybersecurity or looking at IoT or, I mean, you name it, it's going to have AI and ML in it at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what are the, in terms of that narrowing, are there specific use cases that you seem to think are kind of the hot use cases to focus on?
Well, so the first thing I look at is a couple of things I want to tie together. And if they're not tied together, then I'm not interested in it. So one has to be geospatial. I want to have interactive maps that, you know, an analyst or whether a business analyst or an operations specialist is going to be using. I want to have, AI ML models that need to be deployed at scale in an operational setting. And it has to be just an immense amount of data that is coming off of sensors or IoT. If those three things are together, there's nobody that can beat us.
Right.
And that's the foundation. And then from there, it's like, okay, what are the use cases? Logistics, biggest and largest opportunity for us. You know, we have postal, but there's a lot of other ones. Defense Logistics Agency, you know, NAVSUP. There's just, you know, endless places where what we could do to efficiently, help them manage better on a logistics supply chain or predictive maintenance, things like that, it's a perfect fit for us. Mm-hmm. The other ones are like real-time intelligence. That could be whether you're looking at cyber, whether you're looking at things on the surface of the water and below, or from the surface of the planet and above. Those are kind of the core ones.
Yeah. What does at scale mean to you?
So at scale is that I could have millions or tens of millions of endpoints of sensor data coming in, and we and do real-time fusion data correlations where operators sitting behind screens worldwide can get instantaneous data. And so that's, I mean, at scale to me is everything. I mean, all the time, 24/7, available for decision makers.
Right. So it's that's not just the historical data, but streaming data coming from IoT sensors, but also doing kind of the immediate analysis. So it could be visualization over time or space or running ML on it or something like that.
So when we look at that, there's, I mean, there, even though there's, I don't know, a couple thousand different agencies, we really only, there's only a few that have the problems that we solve. Now they're big, like Postal, they're five times larger than any other logistics organization, but you know, we're not going after everything. We're going after the right agencies and departments that have the data, have the problem, and most importantly, have the money.
And do you feel like the agencies that you talk to understand what they can do with the data, or is it kind of a collaborative effort in terms of identifying the potential opportunities?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. It's all about use cases for me. So, if we start with a use case with the customer, it's kind of an iterative process and figure out if that use case is going to fit, one, what we need to be able to show value, and if it's going to help them meet mission. Those combined together, it's kind of what I look for.
Got it. And it's interesting because I would have assumed when I first met you, I would have assumed you just came out of the military.
No, really?
Not just came out of the military, but were a military guy. You know, officer and a gentleman. You know, you were Richard Gere being forced to do push-ups in the rain.
Yeah, I have the white suit.
The white suit. So that's not your storyline. You kind of fell into this through your profession.
No, I could have easily done that. I had was recruited by the Marines and Navy SEAL back in the day, but I just didn't. There was no war going on, you know.
Yeah.
But so I didn't. Just kind of didn't go that way.
Yeah. I do have to say before we go forward, my dog is about to bark. I hear him growling, potentially at a postal worker. He does that quite often. And we're going to get that in the podcast. Because this is our Sheltering in Place series.
Well, my lab is over there snoring, so I could get him on here too if you needed him. So
there you go. So if you were to rank your favorite public sector or military movie of all time, what would it be?
Oh God. Military movie.
I stopped.
I, there's a couple of them. I kind of like Fury a lot, actually. It's a relatively new one. God, what's the other one? It's Inglourious Bastards. I mean, but these
Quentin Tarantino. That's a good one. Yeah. I thought you might go with the upcoming movie of Top Gun 2.
I like Top Gun. I'm not so sure about Tom Cruise, but you know, he's entertaining.
Right.
I think the new Top Gun is going to be pretty wild, though.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that. And then you're a fitness guy, right? You what's a day in the life of Jeff in terms of exercising and staying in shape while sheltering in place?
I'm a little odd as a fitness guy. One, I don't like to work out in gyms, even though I owned a few at one point. I had a couple of gyms, that, you know, 24-hour fitness kind of things, and then I sold those. I'm an outdoor fitness guy, so hiking. I don't really run. I don't swim that much. I'll do paddle boarding, but I do a fair amount of cycling. I ride between, I don't know, anywhere from 5 to 10,000 miles a year. I do mainly gravel. I ride on a lot of gravel, kind of like MJ.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm pretty addicted to it. On average, I try to ride about 200 miles a week, but this job has been killing me on getting my miles in.
Just at Connecticut, we just did a push-up challenge. And apparently you were a little, you had some judgment about how some people did their push-ups.
Yeah, I think we need to have I think Casey needs to teach people how to do them right, but you got to keep your elbows somewhat in and keep it on as a chest exercise, not an arm and shoulder exercise. Your chest has to touch the ground or it doesn't count. That's my thing.
Anyone you want to call out publicly? So as this gets distributed?
Yeah, I'd say maybe, you know, like Lee Martell, you should look at your form. Maybe you need to do 10 again and do them right this time.
Okay. So Lee Martell was just been put on notice. Millions of people across the globe are going to listen to this podcast and know that.
I'll tell you though, Amit K does them right.
Ah, so one of our SEs does some good pushups. And he didn't do 10, he did 40, even though he's only asked to do 10. That's kind of pushing it in a bit.
Yeah, he's an overachiever. I wanted to do, 10 pushups and 10 pull-ups, but I ran out of steam on the pull-ups, so I cut it short.
Yeah, I've been getting into this whole Zoom exercise thing. I have a personal trainer who's been tormenting me, and I hate her, and I hate the sessions, but I actually feel good after, so I keep on doing it. But then as I start the session, I'm like, why am I doing this? I hate this. I hate her.
Yeah, it's. I think a lot of people are getting in better shape. You know, when I go riding, there's usually nobody around here, but everybody's out walking their dogs. I think dogs are getting fitter than anything else on the planet right now.
Yeah, my dog is very happy, although he has torn both his, the equivalent of his ACLs in his back legs.
Ooh, yeah.
So I feel bad walking him around a lot because he ends up like walking on three legs.
Yeah, and I have that too.
Yeah, I don't know if it's worth thousands of dollars of surgery. I think he seems happy with his torn CCLs.
I've had a couple dogs, mainly labs, and I've replaced, I think, three or four ACL equivalents, whatever they are.
Oh, for the dog?
Yeah. But every one of my dogs is like a $10,000 or $15,000 dog by the time I get done with
surgeries
and everything else.
Wow. I'm going to have to find out more about that and what the process was for my doggy and decide how much I love my doggy and whether he's worth it. And if there's a 2-for-1 deal out there or some kind of group.
Yeah, there is.
Cool. Well, Jeff, appreciate you taking the time to talk on our podcast. And anything else you'd want the world to know about Jeff Kennedy or the world of public sector or sheltering in place or anything that's on your mind? Sailing.
Yeah, sailing's the most important thing on my mind right now because I haven't been able to get out on the water and I'm kind of addicted to the ocean. So hopefully that's going to clear up soon and I can get out. It's one of the best things you can ever do.
Wouldn't a boat be one of the safest places to be right now? Just out in the water away from humanity?
It is, but you also have to have, food and water. And so it's not the easiest if you're not prepared with a water maker and ability to, catch food and things like that. Right. So it's not for everybody.
So you might end up like Tom Hanks with a volleyball that you named Wilson that you're talking to.
Yeah, that would, that'd go horribly bad.
I kind of want to see that on YouTube, like just viral videos of that. Cool. Well, thank you so much for doing this episode. This concludes another episode of Telekinesis, and we will be back with more sheltering in place episodes. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. See you later. See you, Casey. The cult of personality.